This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Politics, our focus this hour. Our crack analysis team of Anita Kumar, Bob Gibson, and Bob Roberts on hand to help. So whether you'd like to talk about the controversies surrounding Virginia's current governor, the challenges facing those trying to become the next governor, the latest news from Washington, or anything else political, you are invited to join in. Speaking of Washington, you may have heard that Virginia Congressman Bob Goodlatte is now chairman of the powerful House Judiciary Committee. That means some of the hottest issues, including immigration reform, are on his plate. And Congressman Goodlatte has agreed to be with us for the first part of today's broadcast, but we'll only have him here for a few minutes. So if you'd like to speak with him, might be good to call us right now at 888-WMRA-TALK so we can have the best possible chance of getting to your call right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. And our call-in line is open at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Once again, anything and everything political up for discussion. Already on the phone line with us, the White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, Anita Kumar. Here in the Insight studio, the former political reporter who now heads the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership, Bob Gibson. Plus, James Madison University politics and public policy guru, Bob Roberts. They are our usual analysis team, but with us also today, for just about 10 minutes, the member of the U.S. House of Representatives, whose congressional district covers much of the Shenandoah Valley, Republican from Roanoke, Bob Goodlatte. Congressman, good to be speaking with you again, sir.
It's good to be with all of you and your listeners.
Well, first up, immigration reform. Do I understand correctly, sir, that you believe there should not be any kind of move toward legalization, let alone citizenship? Any move for legalization for the millions of people currently in the country illegally until successful steps have been taken to prevent any more people from being in the U.S. illegally?
That's correct. In other words, legislation can address and should address all three of the major areas of immigration reform. In the House, we're taking a step-by-step approach to address legal immigration reform to grow our economy and create jobs, enforcement to ensure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past, particularly the 1986 law when an easy pathway to citizenship was given with the promise of increased employer sanctions and border security, which never took place. And we need to address the appropriate legal status of people who are not lawfully here. But we have to make sure that we're not making that 1986 mistake. We think the Senate bill does just that. It gives a legal status to perhaps as many as 11 million people before it improves border enforcement, improves enforcement in the interior of the country. And remember, 35-40% of the people who are here illegally entered legally on visitors' visas, student visas, visa waivers, and simply overstayed, so the border doesn't fix that problem. We need to have an E-Verify program that's mandatory, that works for every business, and we need to have a entry-exit visa system so that when people enter the country, we know they entered electronically, and when they leave, we know they left. When these things are in place, then it's appropriate to address giving people who are not lawfully here a legal status so that they were lawfully here, they can work, they can own their own business, they can travel in and out of the country, they can pay their taxes, but they should not get something that people for generations have done legally, and that is get a permanent resident status leading to citizenship based on something other than the ways that people have lawfully done it, which is based on family relationships or an employment basis.
We've only got you for a few minutes, sir. Sure. So I know that Bob Gibson from the Sorensen Institute also has another issue he wanted to ask you about, so we're going to try and fit in as much as we can. Bob?
Hi, Congressman. On a homeland security and privacy issue, you voted yesterday against an amendment to curb NSA surveillance against all Americans regarding phone records. Can you explain why you voted against that amendment?
Well, that amendment simply cuts off the funding for Section 215 of the law, and in doing so, it affects more than simply the metadata program. The Judiciary Committee, which I chair, is very concerned about this issue, and we have already held one public hearing. We're going to hold a classified hearing so we can hear and drill down into the details of the cost of this program and what terrorist events it may have prevented or whether it prevented any at all. And then we will correctly rewrite the law. But to simply say you're going to cut off the funding in the middle of a program without taking into account the national security implications of that seemed to me to be very irresponsible. And I think a majority of the members of the House agree with that. But our committee is very dedicated, and I believe a majority of the committee members agrees with me that we do need to make changes in how that law operates, and we will be examining both Section 215 and Section 702 of the FISA court rules that deals with a different type of surveillance, also a part of the NSA leaks that occurred recently.
McClatchy News Service White House correspondent Anita Kumar.
So, Congressman, is the changes that your committee wants to make, would that restrict the government surveillance? Would it make it harder?
Well, I imagine that it would, but again, it would be inappropriate to draw those conclusions, and that's a reason not to vote for an amendment that simply cuts out funds without knowing what the consequences of doing that are. So we held a public hearing. We were able to discuss quite a lot of this, but we can't discuss in public because it's classified, the cost of the program, instances of terrorist attacks that may have been uncovered or prevented that have not been declassified, and other matters related to how the program operates before we can make a decision about what changes we would make to the program or even if we would discontinue the particular metadata gathering program that was the target of the amendment yesterday, but did it in a way that was not based upon having all the information in front of the members and not based upon knowing whether there are parts of it that should be saved or whether the cutoff of the funds affected other things that law enforcement has long used in terms of gathering data that would have been collateral damage to simply cutting off the funds in that amendment.
Congressman Goodlatte, we're going to try and squeeze in one last question because we can't go much more than a couple more minutes or your staff's going to get really upset with us. And we don't want that to happen because they won't let you come back. But as you know,
we'll be back. We'll be back. I guarantee you that.
As you know, earlier this week, Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell apologized to the people of the state for, as he put it, any embarrassment that may have been created by his financial dealings with the head of the Star Scientific Company. So in your view, is that enough? Should Mr. McDonnell be off the hot seat now?
Well, he did more than that. He apologized. He repaid loans that were made. And I think that those were two positive, appropriate steps. We'll have to watch how this unfolds, but the whole incident has been a surprise to a great many people, including myself, and I think the governor taking steps to make sure that he is being forthcoming with the people of Virginia and taking the steps to pay off those loans were very positive developments for him.
Congressman, do you believe we need stronger ethics laws in Virginia?
Well, that's something for the state legislature to decide, but I will say this. Many people complain in Washington about the very, very detailed laws that we have and ethics rules in the House and laws in the federal government, but they help to avoid appearance of impropriety, and they also help to keep members from straying too far away from what should be for everybody common sense. So those rules are important. I'll leave to the General Assembly the appropriate measures to take for Virginia. I do think Virginia has honest government, but I do also think that rules have their place in terms of what parameters people can operate in with regard to gifts and regard to their relationship with the people who give them gifts.
Congressman, that almost sounds like you don't think it would be a bad idea if Virginia's laws on ethics were not among the most lax in the nation.
I think that I'll leave that again to Virginia legislators, but I will rely upon the fact that while there are many things about federal rules that are complicated and unnecessary. Having rules definitely helps to avoid the appearance of impropriety and straying away from good standards.
Congressman Bob Goodlatte, chairman of the U.S. House of Representatives Judiciary Committee, Republican from Virginia's 6th District, covering much of the Shenandoah Valley. Congressman, thank you so very much for carving out a few minutes for us today.
Glad to be with you folks.
We are the Virginia Insight Politics Update team. Well, really, I'm just the guy who sits and listens to the analysts. And the analysts are White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, Anita Kumar, former newspaper reporter and now head of the Sorensen Institute, Bob Gibson, and from the James Madison University Politics and Public Administration Department's Bob Roberts. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. And if you've got anything political you'd care to talk about, either in the form of an idea, a suggestion, a question, a response, this is the phone number, 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. It does not sound like Republican Congressman Bob Goodlatte, folks, is one of those who thinks the governor should give much thought to resigning.
Correct. And I don't think the governor is giving much thought to resigning.
He made that very clear yesterday.
Even though there was, about 2 weeks ago, a flurry of anonymous web reports that a deal had been struck that he was going to resign, and that was floating around the web, but the governor's office quickly shot those down. And he hired a new chief lawyer, who was a former U.S. attorney from the Western District, Mr. Brownlee, I think.
Yes.
John Brownlee.
Who ran against Ken Cuccinelli for the GOP Attorney General nomination.
And apparently the strategy of the governor's office has changed. He's apparently a lot more open now. He's trying to deal with, I guess, the change the image of what has happened. And so we'll see how long this new campaign continues and what impact it has. There was a quote in the Washington Post this weekend by an anonymous former federal prosecutor that said it doesn't make any difference what he does in terms of changing his PR. If the grand jury wants to indict him, they will indict him.
Anita Kumar, I realize your focus these days there at the White House is on national and international affairs, but you're still a Virginian and you worked for years covering Virginia politics. So let me put this in your domain. Give us the synopsis of what's been going on in this ethics, if I could call it, scandal that the governor of Virginia has been facing. Pretend I haven't listened to any news in the past 6 months. What would I need to know?
Which might be true. No, I'm kidding. Well, Governor McDonnell has, and his family, so Governor, his wife, Maureen, and their children, some parts of their family have taken a number of gifts, loans or cash, whichever way you want to look at it, from a man named Johnny Williams, who heads a Virginia company called Star Scientific. And I think the company's based right outside of Richmond. And the governor has said, let me back up. That getting gifts of any amount is not illegal. It's totally legal in Virginia, and that's what we were discussing earlier with the congressman, should those ethics laws be changed. The governor says he's done nothing wrong, he's done nothing illegal, but this week he did return the money that was a loan to Johnny Williams, I think in a sort of trying to show, you know, good faith there. He did not return or pay for any of the gifts. And just to be clear, a lot of governors, all governors, receive gifts. Democrat, Republican receive gifts from...
But not all of them end up being investigated by the U.S.
Right.
Justice Department for corruption.
Yeah. Right. There's a couple differences here. One is the gifts is pretty normal. What's not normal is he basically got a couple loans. His family got loans. It has been reported that he has a variety of rental properties in the state and that he's, you know, underwater with them. He didn't rent them out or he owes a lot of money. And so the loans are different. Is that my cue to stop talking?
Well, we may be able to give you a little bit more time when we get back from the break. But from what I'm hearing, it sounds to me like key points that we probably should add include the fact that although Virginia's laws are fairly lax, they do require any gift over $50 to be reported.
But only
to the official.
To the lawmaker, not to the wife, the children, whoever.
And that's the other thing, is all the money that went to family members and whether that ever should have been acknowledged or reported to a former Washington Post reporter who asked about it some years ago, and apparently they didn't tell you the truth.
They didn't.
We got more coming up in 1 minute. Bob Roberts is a professor of politics and a professor of public policy at James Madison University. Bob Gibson reported on politics at the Charlottesville Daily Progress for some 3 decades before taking his current post as executive director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership. Anita Kumar reported on Virginia politics for the Washington Post for many years, then last year switched to the McClatchy Newspaper Group, where she now serves as their White House correspondent. I'm Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. Anything and everything political is up for grabs in this discussion. And Anita, there are a couple more things that you wanted to add.
Yeah, I think the big thing with the governor is the question of, sure, he's taken some loans, he's taken some money, he's taken some gifts, and he acknowledges that. But the question is whether he did anything for Star Scientific and their head guy, Johnny Williams. And there are a couple things that have come out that have raised some eyebrows that are being looked at. And one of them is that his wife hosted an event for the company when they were launching a product at the governor's mansion, which is not normally done. The other thing is he asked one of his cabinet members, the health secretary, Bill Hazel, to talk to Johnny Williams about this product. And so the question is it a quid pro quo? Did he do something for Johnny Williams because he got something from Johnny Williams?
And it seems to be a fairly questionable product. I think it's called Anablock, and there are claims that it can help with Alzheimer's and any number of other things. And having the governor's wife hold some sort of meeting encouraging people mm-hmm. to look at this as a health miracle cure is going to raise some eyebrows.
And it doesn't require FDA
right.
approval or testing because it's
right. it's a supplement.
A supplement, a nutritional supplement supposedly made out of a derivative of tobacco.
And the company is, and he's been sued, or his company's been sued by shareholders. In other words,
Johnny Williams,
because of the allegation that he promoted that this has been tested by Johns Hopkins. And
it wasn't Johns Hopkins.
It
was instead a person who works at Johns Hopkins.
Right.
And
they misrepresented.
The current Republican candidate for governor, who's also the current Virginia Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli, has had some dealings with the same
right.
company and acceptance of gifts, although apparently the much slower, lower level, and there's
right.
no federal investigation currently going on about that. However, we may get another perspective here in a moment, because I think we do have on the phone line now our first Democrat of the day. And boy, we got a good Democrat, because this guy is the minority leader for Democrats in the House of Delegates in Virginia. He also is the representative for the 57th House of Delegates district, which covers Charlottesville and part of Albemarle County. David Toscano, so good to talk to you again.
Great to be with you guys.
So, David, should
and
the
Anita?
Governor?
I don't know who else is on this phone.
We consider Anita one of the guys.
One of the guys.
Should the governor resign?
Oh, well, it's too early.
Wow.
You wanted to just bring me right in there. Just. I think it's too early to make that call. I think, you know, you have to give the federal investigators an opportunity to look at all the evidence, and I think one of the things I heard right at the end is Anita was saying, yeah, there are very serious questions about so-called quid pro quo, that the governor might do certain things for Johnny yeah. Williams and his company in exchange for all these gifts. We do have some superficial evidence and some hard evidence that this is true, but whether it rises to a crime is another issue altogether, and the federal investigation and the grand jury will determine that.
Should Virginia, this Bob Roberts, should Virginia change its ethics rules? In other words, I know the Republican, in the House, the Republicans in the House are thinking about basically stiffening disclosure requirements. But should the rules go beyond just simply improving disclosure to prohibit large numbers of gifts that Virginia public officials have commonly taken?
Absolutely, yes. You know, and I think many people who are on the show today understand that this is the second serious scandal that we've had in Virginia politics within the last 5 years, 2009, Philip Hamilton,
correct,
Republican legislator,
yeah,
very powerful. He's now serving 9.5 years in the federal penitentiary for bribery and extortion. And Democrats in the House offered legislation in the aftermath of that to tighten disclosure laws. I think personally that imposing a gift ban at some level, McAuliffe has proposed $100, a gift ban at some level makes a lot of sense. I think we ought to explore the creation of an ethics commission, much like they have in some 41-plus states in the country, that can take a look at transgressions that legislators might have and try to impose some stiffer penalties. And remember, the disclosure laws, the teeth in those laws, there are hardly any teeth.
Right.
I mean, if you don't knowingly do something wrong, you're not subject to any penalty whatsoever. And I think that's what Attorney General Cuccinelli is relying on. He sort of forgot a number of pretty large gifts or visits that were paid for to Johnny Williams' estate or plane trips that he took. He forgot those. He forgot the stock, the $10,000 stock that he purchased in Star Scientific. He just sort of forgot those. And because he was able to amend his disclosure form after he conveniently remembered these things, nothing happens to him.
Right.
And one of the things that we probably ought to mention here also is that the Attorney General's office was supposed to be pursuing a lawsuit against Star Scientific, the
Correct.
Company at the head, the heart of this, for tax violations or potential tax violations.
Well, you know, a cardinal rule among lawyers
disqualification.
Is conflict of interest.
Right,
if you have a conflict, you have to disclose the conflict and get out of the case.
Correct.
And he had this conflict for months and months and months and months before he decided to recuse himself from the case.
So he being the Attorney General.
Right. The Attorney General did.
So, yeah. So David Toscano, the audience that we have here at WMRA is just amazing in their awareness of and intelligence about national political issues and international political issues. But I've found in the past that some of them don't follow state of Virginia politics that much. So I want to just mention, although it's, I hope it doesn't sound too obvious, that when you mentioned the name McAuliffe a little while ago, you're talking about Terry McAuliffe, who is the Democratic candidate for governor in Virginia. And of course, Ken Cuccinelli, who we've been talking about, is the current Virginia Attorney General, is the Republican candidate for governor now in Virginia. And I understand that there was a debate between these two gentlemen just a few days ago, the first one so far in the campaign. Who do you think won?
Well, you know, based on my watching, I watched it via the streaming, and I agree with you that a lot of people in Virginia don't know a whole lot about state politics and are not following very closely the governor's race. My take on the debate was that McAuliffe won it. And the reason,
now, if you had said Ken Cuccinelli won, you would have made the
news. I know, it would have been reported. Well, I mean, if you look at Cuccinelli's been in elective office for a number of years. He's had a lot of experiences in debate, debating. And McAuliffe is a business person. I mean, he has a lot of experience being on television and radio, but not in a debate setting. And I think he did a very good job in trying to draw out the contrast between him and Attorney General Cuccinelli. You know, a lot that's going on here is clouded by the governor's acceptance of these gifts. And the question about whether, you know, the Attorney General became aware of the acceptance of these gifts, when he became aware of that those acceptances, and how much he knew before he turned this over to a prosecutor, a Richmond prosecutor, in November of 2012. I mean, I know this sounds like inside baseball, but it's important because in March of 2012, his office became aware of some of the issues with McDonald receiving money from Johnny Williams. And he didn't turn that over to the prosecutor until November of that year. And you wonder why it took so long. And what did he know? When did he know these things? There are lots of questions that still remain.
David, does it make any difference, any real difference, for ethics reform in Virginia, whether Terry McAuliffe or Ken Cuccinelli wins the governorship?
I think it does. I think that if you look at what the Republicans are proposing, they're not proposing any kind of gift ban.
That's right.
There, and if you look at the statement that the Republican House leadership put out in the aftermath of the McDonnell apology, it is pretty loose in terms of what they are suggesting. Now, there are some things that I think everybody will agree upon, and that is to tighten up some of the disclosure laws and for big, big contributions to report them earlier. But there's no discussion in the Republican circles, that at least the written Republican circles, about an ethics commission.
How stiff should the penalties be?
Well, it's more like the standard. Right now, the standard is if you knowingly violate the disclosure laws, you're subject to a Class 1 misdemeanor. I think that you might have a different standard if you had an ethics commission that could assess whether or not you violated disclosure laws and perhaps impose fines or some kinds of other sanctions on legislators who did that. That would be a little bit lesser than a Class 1 misdemeanor that would require some level of intent to keep that information from the public. But it would hold legislators to a higher standard to disclose these things. I mean, what good is the law is if people just violate it, and then when they're found out, they say, oops, I forgot, they just correct their form, and it's the end of the day. That's pretty easy to allow legislators off the hook under that set of laws.
David Toscano is the minority leader for the House of Delegates, representing Democrats in that chamber of Virginia legislators. He also is the delegate representing the 57th district, which includes the city of Charlottesville and part of Albemarle County. David, as always, it's a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for making time for us.
It's a pleasure. I'll come down anytime. And I just might say a lot of our legislators are very, very concerned because most of us try to do a good job in reporting the gifts that we do get and the contributions that we get. And this gives us a little bit of a black eye, and we want to fix that.
Well, David, if you have a radio nearby there in your office in Charlottesville where we reached you, if you could switch it on, I think that this next caller is someone that you'll want to hear because I know that children's issues are something that you've spent a lot of time on in the legislature, and that's what I believe this next call is going to be about. But, David Toscano, thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
And let me tell anybody who's just joined us that this is a politics update edition of Virginia Insight, and we have three politics watchers on our panel. The man who heads up the Sorensen Institute, Bob Gibson. Sitting next to him, James Madison University political science professor, Bob Roberts, and speaking with us by phone, White House correspondent for the McClatchy Newspaper Group, Anita Kumar. Now I think we're going to Richmond, and this is Emily Griffey from Voices for Virginia's Children. Emily, it's been too long since we've spoken with you. Thanks so much for calling in. I understand that there's a political issue related to children going on with your group.
Yes, you all are just discussing how voters can get more educated on the candidates' issues. And Voices and our partners at NAMI Virginia and 20 other organizations are hosting a gubernatorial forum on mental health on Monday, August 8th. At 6:30 in the evening here at Collegiate School in Richmond. So I think that will be a great opportunity for voters to become more aware on Ken Cuccinelli and Terry McAuliffe's positions on mental health and issues that may impact their families and their lives on a day-to-day basis.
Emily, I'm not sure what gubernatorial forum means. Does that mean that both candidates are going to show up?
Yes, both candidates are going to show up. They will not be debating. They will be answering questions related to how that they will approach mental health issues if they are elected as governor.
This is Bob Roberts. Has your group taken a position on Medicaid expansion with respect to mental health? Because under Medicaid expansion, I assume Medicaid would cover mental health coverage as well as other types of health care.
Yes, I think there are some good things under Medicaid expansion, but the idea of the forum is to really hear from the candidates and how they would approach those issues.
Well, what I meant was that in terms of your organization, the forum, there's a major debate now in Virginia whether to expand Medicaid. And the governor, the next governor, will have a major say in that. In other words, the governor, literally the next governor, could block it or approve it. So is your organization taking a position on that with respect to the gubernatorial campaigns?
We are not taking a position of endorsing one candidate or another. That we are using the forum as a way for voters to hear from each on these issues.
Yeah, and it's my understanding, Emily, that Voices for Virginia's Children has such a terrific reputation with Virginia legislators because you push for what you think you'd like to see done for children, but you don't take sides on the issues.
Correct. Correct.
So let me. I'm terrible at math, and I'm sorry. I thought you said Monday, August 8th.
August 5th.
August 5th. Okay. So this is in Richmond, Monday the 5th at, go ahead.
At Collegiate School, which is in the west end of Richmond. It'll start at 6:30 p.m. You can register online by visiting our site, vakids.org, or the namivirginia.org site, and that's the National Organization for Mental Illness.
And right after we get off the air, we're going to put a link to this on the WMRA.org Virginia Insight page as well. Emily, as always, it's terrific talking to you. Oh, before you go away,
yes.
I know that you never endorse candidates.
Correct.
But if there was someone running for governor who had the ideal platform on children's issues, what might that look like? Can you give us just one or two things that you think it would be wonderful if a candidate for governor said about his stand on children's issues?
Of course. Well, we're very concerned with the increasing number of children in poverty in Virginia. There's currently about 1 in 6 children in Virginia that live in poverty. So we would hope that the next candidate for governor would be looking at short-term solutions and long-term solutions that would help to improve conditions for children in poverty. And that could be things as investing in our early childhood education programs, ensuring food security and economic security, and helping to ensure that Virginia is a competitive place to do business and for parents to be employed and have jobs and contributing to the workforce.
Emily Griffey with the group Voices for Virginia's Children. Good to hear the sound of your voice again, Emily. Thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you.
Hey, you know whose voice we haven't heard in a few minutes? Anita Kumar. What are you doing over there?
I'm here listening and thinking that it's good that they're having a gubernatorial forum because I think the candidates are still arguing about how many debates they're going to
have. They made it pretty clear that they're accepting two more.
Two more.
Okay.
One on September 25th at the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce and one in late September or more likely early October at Virginia Tech. And that one is likely to be on television.
That is?
Okay. So those are mostly the ones that we do every year, the same sort
of
League
of Women Voters one is that we've done. And
it's
not
usually about four. It's usually, I guess it usually includes League.
Yeah. So usually four or five.
Right.
So Ken Cuccinelli turned down the chance
League
to
Women
do
Voters.
A League of Women Voters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but Emily left us with an economics issue.
Right.
So that could be a segue to things that Anita has been working on as a White House correspondent recently, following the president.
That's right. So the president is on the road today, and he was on the road yesterday, and he's been talking a lot about the economy. He is in Jacksonville, Florida today at the port of Jacksonville. And yesterday he was in Illinois and Missouri, and he's basically giving what they are calling at the White House a high-altitude speech, a big-picture speech on the state of the economy, that it's gotten a lot better over the last few years, but there's still a ways to go. And
he says lawmakers have taken their eye off the ball?
He has. That's been their phrase for days now, and I'm not sure that's really going to help Republicans on Capitol Hill wanting to really work with him when he tells them they've taken their eye off the ball. His speeches yesterday had a couple harsh things to say about Republicans and how they aren't doing what they need to do, and they didn't very much like that.
But mostly they're trying to get everybody talking about the economy again, and one proposal is to raise the minimum wage to what?
Right, set from $7.25 to $9 an hour. He's actually been talking about that since the State of the Union,
yep,
at the beginning of the year, but this is a renewed effort on a variety of things, including spending some money on infrastructure, roads and bridges.
You can tell by the music we're going to hit the break,
yes,
here in just a second, and we do have to get to Whoopi Goldberg and her concerns about sex and politics in Virginia. So we will get to that, and we're going to promise not to include Anita in that part of it. And we'll explain that when we come back in just a moment. You know, we're back on the air now. Would it be okay if I told people who you are? Okay. Bob Roberts is a professor of politics and a professor of public policy at James Madison University. Bob Gibson reported on politics at the Charlottesville Daily Progress for a long time before taking his current post as executive director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership. Anita Kumar reported on Virginia politics also for a significant period of time for the Washington Post. and then switched. And now she's a White House correspondent for the McClatchy Newspaper Group. If you want to talk anything about politics, you're allowed to get in on the phone by calling us at 888-967-2825. If it sounds like we're having even more fun than usual, part of it is that the two Bobs are actually in the same studio today. Usually, you know, we have you guys in different locations. For some reason, we couldn't persuade Anita to come here, maybe because she knew we were going to talk about this next issue. But we may still get her help on this. Okay, so Whoopi Goldberg, on the ABC television show The View, on Monday, July 22nd, highlighted sex as an issue in Virginia's gubernatorial campaign. So here's the main part of what she had to say about Virginia's Republican candidate for governor and current Virginia Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli.
Ken Cuccinelli running for governor, and one of his campaign promises is to reinstate the so-called crimes against nature law. Why are you in my bedroom? Get out! Get out! You know? Because what he is saying and what he is doing are two different things, and I don't remember God saying anything about you being in my bedroom telling me what to do. So, sir, you're not going to become the governor. You stay on this track. I'm going to make sure you're behind that and become the governor.
Okay, so the infamous Virginia Crimes Against Nature Act. And if you listening have heard some laughter in our voices, it's because we identified before today's show that we've talked about this a couple of times in the past, not with Whoopi's help, but on our own. And each of the Bobs has explained what that means, but we've never asked Anita to explain
what that means. Well, I think you've asked me. I just didn't want to do it.
Okay, so you want to explain to people?
I'm going to explain it, then Bob's going to help me out.
Okay.
But basically, Whoopi Goldberg and a variety of other people, I have to say, nationally, Democrats and other folks, are criticizing Ken Cuccinelli. He is the Attorney General, as we've mentioned, and he's petitioned a court to reinstate the crimes against nature law.
Are you going to tell us what that
is? Yes, I'm about to say it. The crimes against nature legislation or law outlines oral and anal sex. That's what you wanted me to say, right?
That's correct. I think there's a broad brush being applied to the Cuccinelli campaign here. I think Democrats and the national media are discussing the act as it might apply to all Americans,
right,
all Virginians. And yet I think what the Attorney General is talking about is reinstating the part of it that would apply to victimizing juveniles.
Yeah, and the situation with the case that this led to was a 17-year-old female who was considered
a minor.
No, at the time under the statute, was not a minor. And an adult, she was propositioned by an adult.
47 years old.
Yeah, 47. And they tried to prosecute him under the statute. And the court said they couldn't because the statute was unconstitutionally vague. Now, when it was declared unconstitutionally vague, the Attorney General could have gone to the legislature and said, reenact a statute that makes sodomy between an adult and a minor illegal. He chose not to. And this gets a little more complex. During the debate on Saturday, Judy Will asked him this question. Do you think sex between gays is improper?
Asked the question, the Republican candidate, Ken Cuccinelli.
And he said, my position on that has not changed. And therefore, this has been wrapped up into a political issue regarding gay rights. Because there's a belief here that if that statute is upheld, and if sometime down the road, the Supreme Court changes its mind, in other words, gives it back to the state the right to ban this type of conduct, at one time a state could, that if Cuccinelli is governor, he'd go along with it. So this has become much more than simply an issue of this statute. It's really an issue related to his position on gays.
It is a type of statute that in many places in the country in the past, most famously in Texas, because that was where the Supreme Court first overturned it, that was enforced in a way as an anti-homosexual
Absolutely.
Law. And what most people, I think, don't realize is a so-called anti-sodomy law, which is what Virginia's crimes against nature law
applies equally.
Bans oral sex.
Right.
And so that kind of ban on sexual activities that lots of married people may
Correct.
Choose to engage in.
Or unmarried people engage in.
So the degree to which The government has a law on the books that says it can enter your bedroom. Makes some people uncomfortable,
right.
But people do seem to pick and choose how they want to complain about this kind of issue.
Right.
But the General Assembly could pass a law
easily.
That only does it only, you know, has it pertain to minors.
Correct.
Yeah.
So what really struck me is that Whoopi Goldberg says she's going to make sure Ken Cuccinelli does not get to put his, her word, behind in Virginia's governor's chair. So to you who are listening, I'm curious how you feel about that. Are you pleased that a Hollywood celebrity is calling Mr. Cuccinelli out on an issue that might be important to you? Or would you say that Ms. Goldberg is out of line in your view? By phone, we are at 888-WMRA-TALK. On Facebook, you can find us listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. I thought I heard an or a from the Bob on the left.
I think listeners.
Well, my left. You're actually on your right, Bob
but
Roberts.
Listeners might be interested that if you look at the campaign contributions to Mr. Cuccinelli, Attorney General Cuccinelli, and to Mr. McAuliffe, half of their contributions have come from out of state.
More than half.
More than half.
More than half.
I'm out of state. So both of these candidates are relying heavily on out-of-state money.
Well, it's the only game in the country this year.
It's the only game.
And okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt if you were going to say more.
Yeah.
No, getting back to that issue for one final thing, I think the real issue here, and there are all sorts of people who are upset about this for all sorts of different reasons, the real issue is consent. And anything that's consensual is probably not going to be upheld in the courts.
Right.
Anything that is not consensual probably would be upheld in the court.
Any chance we get you to run for governor?
No.
We have this question on Facebook from Nancy, who says, how did Governor Bob McDonnell pay for his trip to Afghanistan? Nancy, thank you so much for asking that question, because that could lead to all kinds of interesting comments. I want to hear first what Anita Kumar has to say.
I mean, I don't have, I haven't looked into it. I'm assuming that it is paid for by taxpayers' money.
It was a DOD trip that he and the governor of Montana took together.
Right.
The U.S. Department of Defense.
The U.S. Department of Defense, they flew in a military or a DOD plane.
So U.S. taxpayers, federal taxpayers are paying for it.
It's the normal practice. Senators, congressmen and women and governors go over there, and that is the absolute normal way it's done.
Yeah, but doesn't this issue, or at least raising this question, lead to some other things that you'd love to say?
I don't know, you're referring to, I mean, there are some questions about how he's paid for other things, but...
Well, no, the whole idea that in the past, when a U.S. president was mired in controversy, he would go off to visit the troops or some war zone someplace, and now we have a governor who's mired in controversy, and all of a sudden he shows up in Afghanistan.
Right. I mean, it has been, and I think Bob Roberts mentioned this earlier, that, you know, the governor's new strategy is to be more open. I would have to say that the press corps in Richmond would disagree with you on, I believe it was Monday, when his people issued a statement saying he apologized and he had repaid the loans to Johnny Williams. They asked where he was. They asked for his whereabouts, and the answer they got was no answer. Now, I understand there's obviously some security issues when any government official or, you know, elected official goes overseas to an area like this.
Right.
But the answer was nothing. And on Tuesday, we learned, you know, by press release, he was already in Kabul, Afghanistan. So, yes, the governor has not had too many public events in the last couple weeks. He doesn't want to answer too many questions. But, yes, he did go to visit the troops, which always looks good. They have now sent out several emails, press releases with pictures of him over there visiting the troops and talking to defense, you know, DOD folks, Department of Defense folks, which, you know, hoping they'll get some good publicity, I guess.
Right.
Latest poll from what's public policy polling out of North Carolina shows for the very first time, this is a governor that for much of his tenure was one of the most popular governors in the nation, according to these types of surveys. Now, for the very first time, his unpopularity rating is higher than his popular rating. I don't have the poll numbers in front of me, but I think it was something like 35% approve, 42% disapprove.
I think that may be close, but I would point out that the PPP is more Democratic leaning. polling outfit.
But they have shown very high levels of popularity for Mr. McDonald.
There's no doubt it's down.
It's down.
Most of the polls, I believe, I don't know about that one particular, have been showing him in the 40s.
Right,
which,
in the 40s.
It's actually quite not bad. I mean, no. Some people would be happy with 40s. The thing is that he has been, depending on what time of year or what year, I mean, he's been in the 60s. He's been way up there. He's has been very popular. Even Democrats have supported him. So it's quite a big difference.
So, Bob Roberts, I'm curious about how good a political move you think it is for the governor of Virginia to currently be visiting a war zone.
I think it's a good political move for him. I think the strategy of taking response, I found somewhat interesting the way that his Twitter statement about taking responsibility was phrased.
Yeah, well, let's just underscore what you just said. The apology that he sent out was sent out on Twitter.
Right.
Okay.
Sent out on Twitter, and it stated that the apology is, members of my family and I are apologizing.
Mm-hmm.
And that
I apologize for any embarrassment caused by
members of my... No, he apologized, embarrassment by members of...
Yeah, he said members of my family then...
And I.
And that struck some people as kind of strange.
Well, throwing the family under the bus.
Yeah, you're throwing your family under the bus by putting members of my family first.
Well, let's be clear here. I mean, he has gotten a lot of attention, but his wife, the First Lady of Virginia, Maureen McDonnell, has gotten a ton of attention. I mean, a lot of news stories
I agree.
And emails have shown a lot of this was her idea.
Yeah, wait a minute. We don't know whether a lot of it was her idea. I mean, we don't have the facts on that. Whether he was fully aware of what she was doing, we don't know. And to make that assumption that he didn't know... To me, to make the assumption that she was doing this all on her own.
I'm not making that assumption. Okay. I'm saying that there have been emails released, according to Freedom of Information Acts, that have shown she asked for things that he did not ask for. So I assume that some of my family members means the what.
Right, I agree. But the fact of the matter is, just because of emails, I can't assume he wasn't fully aware of it.
And I'm not saying he was or wasn't. Right. I mean, the fact of the matter, one of those loans was for him and his sister. So clearly he, unless he was completely not knowing, I mean, he had to know about that. His wife's name wasn't even on that property.
And
so we have a long tradition here of tossing a question to Anita Kumar near the end of the show that is completely unexpected, that she's had no warning.
Oh, no.
Because she's the only one not in the studio.
That's right. We're getting close to out of time, so I don't want to miss out on this tradition. Hey, Anita, it's only been a little bit more than a week since the U.S. Senate confirmed Richard Cordray to head the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. I would think that that was a big victory in the White House.
I didn't know that was coming. It was a big victory in the White House. They have been wanting him to head up that agency for quite some time. But you didn't say it actually came because Democrats and Republicans in the Senate struck a deal to allow his nomination and a ton of other ones to go through. Republicans have been blocking a lot of the president's nomination. So the president nominates and the Senate confirms in a variety of agencies, cabinet secretaries, and Republicans were holding some of those up, some controversial ones up.
So John McCain defused the nuclear option.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Senator Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, they sat down and struck a deal that basically allowed some of the nominations to go through. And in return, the Democrats said they would, well, I'm not going to get way into the weeds on this, but basically they would not change some of the rules in the Senate.
Right.
So they would still allow the minority party, the Republicans, to have the voice that they have now.
The filibuster.
The supermajority.
Yeah.
So is that kind of deal striking a big deal at this point in Washington after much gridlock?
They don't strike any deals anymore. So, I mean, I shouldn't say that. They sometimes strike deals. But it's becoming less common and just more difficult on a variety of levels for a variety of issues. So,
and as long as you're there at the White House, Eric Holder, the U.S. Attorney General, is making some news today.
He is. He announced today that the Justice Department was going to look at and challenge in courts across the country ways to provide. A lot of states have imposed voting restrictions, or they're asking for voter identification at the polls, and he is going to challenge some of those laws. And this comes after the Supreme Court last month struck down part of the Voting Rights Act, which was supposed to provide help blacks and minorities have more representation at the polls.
So God may bless Texas, but the U.S. Justice Department doesn't have to.
That's correct.
So the very first thing they're doing, I don't even know if it's filed yet, but they said today were filing a motion in Texas, which the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, is not happy about, to say that, ask a judge and say, hey, the Justice Department wants to review all these election-related laws. We should review them before they go into effect.
And they want to do this before the midterm elections next year.
Yeah.
They want to make sure they can get injunctions at least to block as many of these voter ID laws as possible, and possibly in Virginia. So we'll have to see if they bring suit.
Yeah,
in Virginia.
A number of states.
So most of the states that are affected are in the South and in the Southwest.
Right.
So the thinking is that voter ID laws are more likely to keep Democrats from voting than Republicans.
Poor people, black people, minority people, people who don't have driver's licenses.
So, yeah.
The elderly.
People who work for NPR stations. Well, you said poor people. Our guests have been Bob Gibson, Executive Director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership, Bob Roberts, Professor of Political Science at James Madison University, and McClatchy Newspaper's White House correspondent and Charlottesville native, Anita Kumar. Thanks, gang, so much for creating another fascinating hour of radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Now, Virginia Insight's executive producer we want to mention for sure is Matt Mingay. But we should also mention that our associate producers are Terry Ward and Bob Levicky, and that some of our break music is supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And when you get to that page, you will find more information about all of our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insights.